Here is pitch 9 to Cronenworth, and Jake swings, bounces it to first. Bowers off the line, has it, race to the bag, not in time. Fernando coming home, he'll score. The game is tied. Tatis never stopped running, and Bowers, the first baseman, couldn't beat Cronenworth to first. By the time he looked home, Fernando was there. There will be no challenge. It's 2-2.
First day of spring training. Pitchers cover first base. Apparently, Aaron Ashby was not in attendance that day. You know that's one of my great pet peeves, Scraby, but thank you so much to Aaron Ashby for not getting there in time and allowing Jake to beat that play. One of many incredible and exciting plays in a 4-3 victory today for the Padres over the Milwaukee Brewers in 11 innings, a game, Scraby, that kept you and I at bay until nighttime here. It is 6 p.m. now, and, well, judging by the results of the game and the fact that we only have 1 hour, we are already into the happy hour. So welcome to it. Happy hour to you.
Love it. Love it.
What a game. Happy hour brought to you by GL Pools, the swimming pool experts trusted by thousands of San Diegans. For 20 years, baseball season is indeed in full swing. So is swim season, so make sure your pool is ready. Call now. Mention radio. Get 20% off new service plans in 2026. Well, let me just start with this, Scraby, and then I'll see if you want to argue it.
Okay.
That was the best game of the year. And I know it's fresh in our minds, so we tend to overrate games that are fresh. You know, you watch it, you run outside the door, whatever. You go, what a game!
Yeah, you do all
that. Did you see that game? It was incredible! But any other game you want to bring up this year, I can come up with stuff that happened in this game that I think can match it or surpass it. It's incredible. And it's funny because everybody wants baseball to go quicker. That was 3 hours and 46 minutes. If they played 4:46, it wouldn't have bothered me at all.
It's good
it was
baseball.
That good.
Yeah.
And there were, and it wasn't perfect. You know, there were some mistakes here and there. You know, so it had a little bit of everything. It obviously had a lot of drama. It had a ton of opportunities. Now, you look at a score like this, 4-3, and you say, well, that's kind of a low-scoring game for the game of the year. However, the Brewers were 2-for-15 with runners in scoring position. They should have scored 9 runs. The Padres were not a lot better, 2-for-11. They could have scored 8 or 9 runs themselves. So it wasn't the number of runs scored. It was the number of runs that could have scored. I don't know how many defensive plays were missed, but I also know there were a few that were made, including a Mitchell diving to save the game in the bottom of the ninth
great
inning.
Great play.
That was great, but it wasn't anywhere as near as good as the catch the kid, Lara, made on the shot that Merrill hit just before Campusano came up.
Yes.
What a catch that was.
Like he I don't even think he saw the ball. He just put his glove up.
Incredible. So, I mean, you had a lot of that. I thought the Padres really could have won the game there in the bottom of the ninth inning. And Jace Bowen actually could have come off the field as the hero, not because of the catch that Mitchell made to rob him, but, man, that ground ball that he hit and went down the third baseline, it sure looked like it bounced over the bag to me. And there was no challenge. I don't know if you can challenge.
You can't challenge foul balls.
And there's not much you can do. But understand, a ball going down the line and a ground ball like that does not have to stay fair all the way down the line. All it has to do, it can be in fair territory, and on the last bounce, it can go into foul territory. But as long as it goes over the bag when it does that, that's a fair ball. I thought that's what happened. They did. They showed it a couple of times. And Mark Grant is, you know, he's so nice to the umpires, and I don't blame him because it's a long season.
He's got to deal with them.
And he says, that's a tough call. He's right. It's a tough call. You have 1/2 second to decide there. But, man, that could have gone the Padres' way right there. Game over. But it didn't. And then, of course, in the next or the 11th inning, they hit one down the line, Sanchez, and it hits the bag. There's no argument on that. They take the lead. Morejon, incredible performance by Mortahone. The disappointment of giving up the lead and then having a wild pitch move the runner to third and nobody out. And you know right there that at 3-2, you can tie the game because you get a ghost runner. But 4-2, 5-2, it's going to be over. And for him to get all three strikeouts there, you know, just some really gutty pitching. There's so many guys were involved in this game. Look, the second batter of the game, Terang, hit a soft line drive to center field. Jake Cronenworth made one of the better catches you'll ever see on a soft line drive to rob
full
him.
Extension.
So it started there. And to me, it just continued out throughout the game. The Padres had to battle it. They had to go against Dustin May, who, if I'm the Dodgers, never mind Skubal, they ought to work a trade right now to get Dustin May.
No joke.
Because he's the one guy, the Padres, I don't think will be able to hit if you get into the playoffs.
Mizorowski, Schmizorowski.
Right. Dustin May has our number. Last two games, he's been almost untouchable. So, you know, it was so good. The bullpen, seven innings, and I'll call it shutout baseball. I know the run Mortahone gave up, but again, that's the ghost runner. So
it's unearned.
It's an unearned run. From Bradley to Estrada, I thought, why are they bringing – they're bringing Kyle Hart in here, really? I love Kyle, don't get me wrong, but not in a situation like this. This felt like game five of the NLCS to me. Like, I'm not bringing Kyle Hart in. But you know what? He struck out those guys. I mean, he made some big pitches there in that eighth inning. And then, you know,
I would rather have Kyle Hart than Wandy.
Well, okay. I'm not going to disagree, but to me, that was more to Hone's inning there.
Yeah.
But
probably.
It worked out because he ended up getting to save him for the 10th and 11th. Anyway, there was a lot of strategical moves made in the game. A lot of them I didn't agree with at all. Why Xander Bogaerts is not bunting leading off the bottom of the 10th inning? Please explain, unless Xander Bogaerts for $38 million just doesn't know how to bunt. I can't fathom when you have a tie score and the winning run is right there, you bunt. And if Craig Stammen thought, well, if he bunts and they move to third, they're just going to walk Fernando. I don't want to take the bat out of Fernando's hands.
We've seen that earlier this year.
Yes, we did. However, they took it out of his hands anyway.
They did.
Because first base was still open.
Yeah.
He didn't get to hit. They have to move that runner to third base there. They just do. I love Smart and good baseball. I don't like baseball that makes no sense. And I just can't understand why you don't bunt there, but it turned out okay in the end. Obviously, they win the game and all's forgiven. I thought the Brewers made a lot of moves that made no sense also.
Pat Murphy did not have a great managed series.
I didn't think he had a great series. And I'll tell you another thing. I don't watch the Brewers every day, nor do you. But if the Brewers play baseball like that all season, they would not have the best record in the major leagues.
No way. That was a sloppy team.
Sloppy series, bad mistakes, not covering first base,
Yeah. Wild
pitches, crazy throws, throwing to the wrong base. The Padres took advantage of a lot of it. I was not impressed with that series for Milwaukee. Obviously, they don't play like that because they wouldn't have the record they do.
And before anybody says, well, because the Brewers, best record in baseball,
yeah.
This is a big series win. I don't care if the Brewers played bad baseball. The Padres played better baseball.
Without question, the Padres deserve to win this whole series. I mean, Merrill hits the winning home run in the first game last night. Can anybody feel any better than getting cut by a team and a month later beating them with a grand slam?
That's a pretty good feeling.
How good must have that been?
That's a pretty good
for
feeling.
For Renifo last night.
Yep,
I mean,
yep, yep.
Are you kidding? It was the greatest thing, and he hit it off a guy that hasn't given up a run hardly all year. And then the Padres kept hitting on Kyle Harrison last night. That was impressive for sure. And this win today, you had the five or six run inning in the ninth, beat the Mariners. Merrill had the winning hit. You had the walk-off grand slam. I think Bogey hit that early in the year.
Yeah.
Sheets hit a walk-off. You know, so they've had some really exciting stuff. But I think from start to finish with everything that happened in this game, I thought that was the best game I've seen.
It's pretty good. I mean, just because also where they are in the season,
It put them into the wild card.
They're number two in the wild card right now.
Right, everybody else, the other guys lost. Like, so, yeah, the timing of it adds to why I agree that it was a great, great game. And I'll be honest with you, had they lost 3-2, I was ready to come in here and say that was one of the best games I saw all year, even if they lost. It was just that good of a game.
It was really
there were
good.
That many things that happened. How many things happened, Scraby? You know that on the day games, I do notes on a scorecard. I sit, I watch the game, I make little notes during the game.
It's one of your
passions.
Yes.
Today, it was not notes on a scorecard. It was notes.
Oh, my gosh.
It was notes on a bibliography.
Oh, my gosh.
12 pages of notes on a scorecard
this
today.
This is the most by far.
Look at it. I can fan myself. I have so many pieces of paper.
I saw a huge stack of
papers. It's a huge stack of guys. So, anyway, we're not going to do... I know that a lot of people, honestly, after these day games, you tune in. We're covering most of it, just talking about the game. But if you want to hear the actual notes on a scorecard, this was such a good game. We got to give it its own segment on the show tomorrow. And we have a full 4 hours tomorrow.
No, we have three.
So we will... Sorry. Oh,
we
right,
have three we and have the roundtable replay. But round we table. Do have a ton of time
but we
to
will
talk
have a ton of time
this.
To do... And it needs a ton of time. Like, I couldn't do it between now and the end of the show. That's how many things happened in this game.
There are a lot of pieces of paper in
well,
your
it was
head.
A great... That's how I enjoyed the game. There was stuff happening almost every half inning.
What page is Manny not running out... to first. What page is
on
that?
On the double play in the first inning, it's on page one.
No, it wasn't the first inning.
Well, yeah, well, he did it twice.
Yeah, the second time.
He did it more than once.
The second time was kind of ridiculous because it was a... Because I
know
he could have got there.
Twice in the game, he hit ground balls, and when they fanned over to the shot of the first baseman catching the ball, Manny was not yet even in the picture. I think about that.
I honestly thought when I saw him not in the picture, I was like, oh, he's already past first base.
He wasn't even there yet.
And then I saw him mosey from the bottom of the
Come
screen.
Come on, Manny. I know you're old. I know we don't want you to tear a hamstring, but...
That's a situation where you got to run out. Yeah, it's a situation. Because the GIDP today was strong for the Padres. I think
we
had,
hit
what,
into
three
four,
or four,
and we could have been five in the last inning and lost the game if one more. But Jackson Mara wouldn't let that happen. He hit that bomb.
They even
that the guy
got
caught
they
over
even
there.
Got one back when what was his name Hamilton or something had the error at second base and
yeah he tried to give them the lead by kicking that ball but they hit into a double play right after that
next batter.
Yeah, it was a bad day for the double play. Which is even, and again, Bogarts came up in another situation, by the way, with runners at, I think it was first and second, and he swung away. And again, on a day when you've already hit in the four double plays, you got to bunt the ball.
It doesn't seem like
they're
against the
bunt,
though.
I'm not blaming Bogarts. I'm blaming whoever doesn't make him bunt the ball.
But it doesn't seem like they are against bunting, but it seems like in certain situations that call for bunting, they're not bunting.
You've got to bunt in the bottom of the 10th inning. I challenge anybody to explain to me why that was a smart play for him to swing there.
Because he hit a home run earlier in the day?
That's not good enough. We're going to take a break. When we come back, a lot more stuff from just a great game. The Padres are into the wild card spot now, but there's still 40 games left.
It's a lot.
We're actually just now going into the fourth quarter of the season. But this rally over the last 3 weeks has been remarkable. From eighth in the wild card to second. Nobody saw it coming, and if you did, you're probably lying, because I don't think any of us did.
We all gave up on that Thursday against the Braves.
we sure,
all gave up.
We sure did, and they've answered by going 15-4 since then. Gwynn and Chris,
crazy.
A short happy hour on 97.3 The Fan.
And Xander gets a hanging breaking ball, hits it in the air, deep to left field, way, way, way back, and gone, a home run. Xander Bogaerts gets loose, his 10th of the year, and the Pods are on the board. It's 2-1 here in the third.
I'd rather have you played a highlight of him laying a bunt down there in the 10th inning, but alas,
don't have one.
I know, because he didn't lay down a bunt in the 10th inning, but he did homer Only for the second time, by the way, since May 30th. That's hard to believe.
That is hard to believe.
It was nice to hear Don Orsillo get to say, bogey goes boom. We haven't heard it in a long time.
Surprised he delivered it so well.
And he still remembered it. Yeah. Like he didn't have to file
it
through and find
anymore.
What do I used to say on Bogart's home runs again? hanging curve. That's the only bad pitch Dustin May has thrown against the Padres, I think, this season.
It's ridiculous.
He was great again today, but the Padres came back. They tied it because Aaron Ashby, you know Aaron Ashby, by the way, he is the nephew of Andy Ashby, the great Padre pitcher. Aaron Ashby didn't get over to first base in time. And lo and behold, you know what was important? Jake ran as hard as he could.
He did.
I didn't know you're supposed to. I thought you didn't need to do that. Those are the texts that I get from people. They say, Chris, you know, stop tacking, you know, making people run hard to first base. You're out of line.
I would say
I'm out of line.
If Manny Machado or Fernando didn't bust it down the line, then that's fair game for criticism in that situation.
In that situation, I think they would bust it down the line. But Jake
Manny
did.
Wouldn't make it, but Jake and Fernando would.
Jake made it, and they got the game tie. And great, you know, look, Fernando, great base running, right? He was on the move because it was the 3-2 pitch. But he didn't take anything for granted. You know, he came around third, sprinted in. Had he hesitated at all, they could have thrown home and maybe, you know, been able to get him. But, so give Fernando credit there. There's two heroes in the game besides of everything we've already talked about. And if you just tuned in, it was one of the better games of the year. I think it was the best game of the year, not just because of the outcome, but just all the twists and turns of it.
The drama.
And all the opportunities. Seemed like every half inning there was some sort of threat and some sort of managerial move or strategy thing that had to be made. So to me, that's exciting stuff that I really enjoy. Obviously, Campusano. Look, he wins the game on a 2-strike hit. Campusano, don't forget, he may have fallen as low as any major league player I have ever seen as of, midway in last year? Didn't he go almost a whole calendar year without getting a hit?
I don't believe he had a hit last year.
The whole season he didn't have a hit.
I mean, and let's also say that he wasn't at the big league level a lot.
But because he couldn't get a hit was part of the reason, and injuries were the other.
Yes.
But he hadn't had a hit, and every time he went to the minors, he crushed the ball, and every single time they brought him up, it never worked for him. We started hearing all the whispers. Because you always do when a guy doesn't hit.
Always.
Well, he's not trying. He doesn't put the effort into it. He doesn't work. He's not easy to get along with. I mean, I heard it all about Campusano.
It is pretty amazing how that stuff comes out.
Yeah, and I think that you and me, and I felt that, you know, and maybe everybody but A.J. Preller totally just gave up on this guy. Bob Melvin, I don't think liked him. Mike Schilt, I don't think liked him.
I think that's for sure.
Campusano to me was about as low as any player could ever be in terms of how is he going to get out of this. Well, there was a note in Kevin Acey's newsletter today, and you've made me start reading this thing,
I'm glad I'm reading it.
Kevin Acey made a case that Campusano has been not just okay this year, that he's been maybe the best hitting catcher in all of baseball. Now, obviously, he missed time because of injury, so there's other catchers that may have some numbers in terms of home runs, RBI. But Campusano's hitting well over 300 now.
Mm-hmm.
He's coming through big time. Oh, and by the way, a guy that we don't trust behind the plate threw out Bryce Terang trying to steal in the 10th inning and also blocked 4 or 5 bounced balls that came in there in extra innings and from Mason Miller to keep the Brewers from taking extra bases. There was one pitch that Mason Miller threw so hard today that Campusano barely could get his glove turned around to catch it. And he was not, the home plate umpire, good Marquez, actually gave him a minute to kind of just recover. He was just catching the ball. but it's Mason Miller. So that's not always a given.
It's 103.6, too, I think.
Was that what that was?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think Campusano is a great hero, and I'm so happy for him because you and me and everyone else, we didn't just give up on this guy. We heaped dirt on him and threw away the shovel.
I can't say that you did, though.
Maybe I can't say that you did because
I don't like to give you credit, but you did.
I tried to just bring him along, but
you want to know what he's hitting this year?
Yeah, he's up to 320, maybe
314.
Yeah,
923 OPS.
Yeah,
5 homers, 20 RBIs, yeah. 18 walks. You also, I just saw this. Austin Hedges is hitting 272.
Are we facing Hedgie this weekend?
Is he still
in Cleveland?
Yes, he's still in Cleveland. But
we'll see Hedgie this weekend.
Austin,
you're telling me that he won't be the usual automatic out this weekend?
Now, he has a lot less games than other guys, but
no, that's the thing with Campusano. He hasn't played to put the numbers up of a lot of catchers, but Kevin Acey's point was when he's been there, he's been almost as good as anyone. So
121 at bats.
I'm so happy for Campusano. The other hero today was a guy that you can't give me any credit for staying behind. Because I totally gave up on Freddie Fermin.
Oh, yes.
And I didn't think, and you did. You agreed with me here, you didn't think Freddie Fermin would ever get an ABS call right. Do you know that he himself struck out 3 Brewers today? 3! Himself!
I didn't realize it was 3, but I knew it was important.
He did! 3 times in the game, a pitch was thrown with 2 strikes that was called a ball, that Fermin challenged, and the guy struck out. It happened 3 times.
He also had a really bad challenge in the extra innings.
But overall, hey, dude, he was 4 for 5. That I'll take.
Did you just dude me?
I duded you. I was so excited by Fermin, I couldn't help it. And by the way, we saw the Astros come in, and they were horrible on challenges.
Terrible.
The Brewers aren't a lot better.
They were really bad,
too. The Brewers are terrible.
They lost their challenges today.
So I am convinced, as much as I get mad at the Padres, that this is just something that these geniuses in baseball cannot figure out.
Which tells me it's not easy at all.
But we know that the actual challenge is not easy. But when to use them should be done better.
Let's talk about a challenge that went so well last night.
How about
with
that
Fernando?
One? Well,
Fernando never challenges.
No.
He didn't even hesitate to challenge.
I didn't know that.
Slam later.
Fernando challenged in the 3rd game of the season. Did not challenge again until July.
It doesn't surprise me.
He said, "I don't want to anymore." He lost one at the beginning, and he's like, "That's it."
Thank goodness he did.
Thank God he challenged that one last night. But that's okay. People think it's the time of the game. It's not just that. It's the situation. Leading off an inning on a 1-1 pitch is not the situation. Bases loaded, 2 outs, 3-2, and you think you can win it. That's the time you win it.
Use them in situation. Yeah.
Fernando did it perfectly last night. Fermin, 3 for 3 on getting guys struck out today.
There should be a stat for that.
Hey, Freddie, I wish you could be watching on your way to the airport because here I'm doing this for you.
Oh, you're tipping your cap to him.
Hats off to Freddie for me.
Oh, hats off. I see.
Hats off. He figured it out. It took him a long time. Maybe he got tired of hearing how bad he was on the challenges, because now he's coming through, I couldn't be happier
for him.
Maybe
the concussion thing is really a big
maybe
deal.
Maybe that was the thing, yeah.
Maybe his brain was just foggy.
People are starting to say that,
he's hitting so much better since he came off the IL. He's been a different player. I wonder also, and we can't ever prove this, but I wonder also how much Ethan Salas being promoted to AAA got into
some of these guys'
head.
Yeah. You can never
tell. I'll lose my job if I don't get better.
It's an interesting way of looking at it, and it may not be wrong. Padres 4, Brewers 3. In 11, I thought, just a thrilled, packed innings. 3 hours, 46 minutes, fine. I'll sit there all day for that.
Yeah.
It was that good.
It was that good.
And look, the Padres move into sole possession a second. They go at one up. The Rockies beat the Diamondbacks. Do you realize the Rockies hadn't won a road series since May? Thank you to the Rockies.
Yeah, thank you,
of all people.
We're going to need the Rockies to play a lot of spoiler.
Well, they're getting the Dodgers are getting the Brewers next. So we'll see if the Brewers can get it turned around as they go up to L.A. Padres, of course, are heading to Cleveland, and then the Mets. We're heading to a break. We have one more segment. We'll finish up this game. Remember, notes on a scorecard for this game would have overflowed. So we're going to do it on the show tomorrow. Don't miss it. It's going to be one of the great notes on a scorecard. There's so much stuff to it. It'll be on the show tomorrow. Also, today something really kind of weird happened in the NBA. And we don't always go NBA here, but the Lakers have been sold, and nobody was like saw this coming for a ton of reasons.
Yeah.
So we'll kind of get into that a little bit when we come back. And I have one more thing when we come back. I don't know the guy's name, and I apologize because he's introduced himself to me at Padre Games, and I'm sorry. But he's the guy that puts the notes up on real notes on the scorecard.
Yes.
Up on the scoreboard.
Yes.
And he may not be the only one, but there might be a couple guys who do this.
His name Jeff?
I'm sorry, I'm forgetting his name, and I feel bad. I know. If he's out there, send me a text, something. But, hey, he puts great notes up there. One of them, of course, we always have fun with, is that he puts the Helio Ramos hit the foul ball that I caught in the press box,
yes,
and I've
did.
Always appreciated that. He put the best note I've ever seen up there last night.
Really?
Ever. I'm going to share that with you and all the rest when we come back on Gwen and Chris. I don't think you can ever hear the song again without seeing Will Ferrell's belly protruding from that sweater on Saturday Night Live. Welcome back to Gwen and Chris. What a game today. Padres over the Brewers, 4-3 in 11. The winner was driven in by Luis Camposano. Two out, two strike, single to right. Sun Moon Song, by the way, who stole second.
Mm-hmm.
Just another of the little things that happened in this game. Raced around with the winning run. He didn't make it by much.
No, I
thought
he was
pretty close.
I thought he was going to be out.
His throw was just a little high enough for him to get down under that tag and win that ball game. A thriller as the Padres sweep the Brewers. I think it's the second time this year. You'd have to look this up, Scrabe. I think it's the second time this year the Padres have swept the team with baseball's best record. They did it earlier when the Braves came to town, I think, had the best record.
Interesting.
It was close. But I remember when they swept Atlanta.
Yeah, no, of course.
I think they had the best record, or they were close to it.
Hey, I'll take sweeps over two teams that are likely in the playoffs.
On our way now to Cleveland and the Mets. Padres season has gone like this: 29-18. Oh man, we're great. We're going to the World Series. 21-35.
Ugh.
That was 2 months of hell.
That was 2 months of hell.
And now 15-4. So there you have it. Add it all up. You're, 62-54 now with 40 games to go.
Someone needs to tell Jackson Merrill that next time he's in a slump, just watch high school video, because that's what he said he did against the Royals, and then he ended up having two home runs in a game, and ever since then, he's never looked back.
Jackson Merrill's been on fire. And by the way, if A.J. Preller wants to look on the scrap heap and see if he can find any more players lying around.
Like Renjifo?
Yeah, and even Austin Hayes. I don't think he had a hit today, but he came on with a burst, and he was starting today, Austin Hayes. I looked at the outfield alignment today. Renjifo, Merrill, and Hayes. Huh?
We all had that.
What is that?
We all had that on our bingo card.
It's not something we expected.
We're going to get
into this Laker story today, because like I said, not a lot of NBA stuff at this time of year, but this has got a lot of people going, what in the world is going on? So we'll explain that. But
it has everything that I like in a story.
Yes, I know. Possible
intrigue, conscribacy.
Possible conscribacy. All right. You say the guy in charge of the scoreboard notes is named Jeff.
I'm pretty sure his name is Jeff.
You're pretty sure. So if you're out there, Jeff, I hope it's you. And if it's not, I apologize, but they put a note up last night that has kept me going for 12 straight hours. Here's the note.
12 straight hours.
Well, they put it up in the game last night, so it was about 6:30, or maybe 24 hours. I guess we're 6:30 the next day. All right, they put the note up. Here it is. Wilson Contreras. Wilson Contreras is on the...
Wilson's the hothead.
Right, this is William.
William is the brewer catcher. Normal guy.
Right, and it makes sense that it's William.
Yes.
Because this note would not be correct if it was Wilson. William Contreras is the only player, according to this note on the scoreboard last night, the only player in Major League history who has the letters in his name to form the word All-Star.
I did.
Did you see it?
I think Jesse mentioned it during the broadcast.
It sounds
night.
Like Jesse would mention
well,
it.
Because it was on the scoreboard.
Right, it was on the scoreboard, so I'm not the only one who's... Yeah, if you hit the game last night, you might have seen it. You might have dismissed it, though, and not realized, how is that possible? There's been a billion guys play baseball.
Just the word All-Star, though?
All-Star. Now, if you take William Contreras' name, he's got an A, Contreras. He's got two L's in William.
He does.
And then he's got an S in Contreras.
Yes.
He's got a T for star, Contreras. Right, in Contreras. He got an R, or an A and an R. Another A and an R. I just can't believe that he's the only one.
Yeah, I don't understand.
All the people that play Major League Baseball, you can't draw the letters from one other player's name to spell out All-Star?
That is weird. That doesn't seem possible.
It doesn't seem possible.
There's no guy named, like, Larry something?
I just would think there's somebody.
That is weird.
And if you look at his brother, Wilson doesn't have two L's, so you can't do it in his name.
He doesn't?
Only in William.
I thought he did.
No.
Wow.
So,
well, I mean, yeah, okay.
Congratulations to whoever came up with that note. My first thing would be to say, I can't believe that we even know that. But in this day and age, I do expect that there would be somebody who puts that into a computer program and it spits it out.
Yeah.
But the fact that that is potentially true, and I guess it is, like to believe everything I read, that is amazing to me.
That is amazing.
These are the things that keep me up at night.
Here's another. This is why I know Jeff is the guy, because he has a bunch of good ones on his Twitter.
Okay.
On Yordan Alvarez. Like, how does he know this stuff?
Used to
go dove hunting with a slingshot when he was living in Cuba. Taylor Trammell said in an online Q&A in 2021 that pineapple does not belong on pizza. I got to give Jeff a lot of credit, though, because... these are not easy to come up with.
Well, and not only that, he has to come up with more than one per game.
Yes.
Because the guy comes up four times.
Yeah.
So you got to keep it fresh, keep it interesting.
I don't know how you do it.
Good job. All right, Jeff, if it's you, and it sounds like it is, thumbs up from the Gwen and Chris show. But this, the William Contreras note has blown me away.
I can't believe that's the only name in the history of the sport. I really can't believe it.
I can't either. There had to be some guy who played in 1905 or something that you could have spelled out All-Star with his name.
Jeff said Grover Cleveland Alexander couldn't do that. Is that a player?
Grover Cleveland Alexander, yeah, but I think he, there's two L's in there. I don't know. Anyway, Jeff, good one.
Amazing.
All right, let's get to, we gave you everything on the Padres, and a reminder, the notes on a scorecard, tomorrow. We came on so late today, I didn't want to rush it. It's 12 pages long, but it's going to be worth it. It'll be on the show tomorrow. We have a three-hour show ahead of the roundtable replay. So you notes on a scorecard fans, you know who you are, and I appreciate you. Understand that we'll get to it tomorrow. But Scraby, take us through what happened with the Lakers today, because this is not something anybody saw coming.
No.
The background is that the Lakers were just sold.
June 2025.
Not that long ago. Like
just over a year ago. 14 months ago.
14 months ago, they were sold to some guy named Walter? Mark?
Mark Walter.
All right. He's the guy that owns the Dodgers and now the Lakers? Or was it the Lakers and then the Dodgers?
No, he owned the Dodgers first. Then he got the Lakers, and he also has the Sparks. So what happened here was we woke up this morning to news that the Lakers have been sold. Now, he bought the Lakers for $10 billion last year.
How much?
$10
billion. $10 billion.
Last June.
So he makes an investment for $10 billion 14 months ago.
Yes.
And what did he sell it for today?
He sold it for $12.5 billion. So he makes the profit of $2.5 billion. But
in 14 months.
Which all sounds great to all of us.
Sounds pretty good,
but
sure.
But for someone who's already a billionaire, assets are more important at a certain point than money.
So you're saying that
Lakers
selling this for the headline is the profit, but there may be more at work here, and
there
this
has
is where you
be.
Start your conscribacy, which is why would somebody who put everything they've got into buying the Lakers 14 months ago be just willy-nilly out of the blue selling them today?
Not even that, Chris. Like, I guess what happened was the people who wanted to buy the Lakers contacted them on Friday. Like, this last Friday.
Okay.
And today they have been sold for $12.5 billion. I don't know about you.
What's today?
But
Wednesday. 5 days they did
five
this?
5 days.
Okay, we've been waiting.
For a $12.5 billion deal to happen.
We've been waiting for the Padre thing to be okayed for 8 months now. Or almost 8 months. It was revealed in May, because yesterday I said it was announced. It was not. It was revealed in May that we have new owners here finally, but it's now June, July, August. So 3.5 months we're waiting for official confirmation of that sale.
Yes.
But this has happened in 14 months and now 5 days, and the name that is attached to
there's
two names, but one of the names isn't gonna raise any eyebrows.
And here's where we're not gonna go political.
No, we're not going political. This name's just gonna be familiar to you, and you can figure it out on your own.
So the first name is Bob Iger, the former Disney CEO.
He's Bob Iger.
Which, Disney, by the way, he's not even rich enough. He's rich, but he's not $12 billion rich.
Okay, but he's bringing in somebody who apparently is pushing him over the top.
So Joshua Kushner is who everybody is talking
Kushner
about.
Kushner is now, the name.
Yes, if you know the name Kushner, you know that there's been some dealings here recently.
Well, he's the brother of Jared Kushner, who is married to Donald Trump's daughter. And
Ivanka.
Kushner's name has been thrown in there in the political ring. We're not going to go there, but the fact of the matter is this Kushner is related to that Kushner.
Yes.
And that gets some people wondering.
Now, here's where the conspiracy comes in.
Okay.
Because normally...
I want to hear everybody... Shh! Okay, let's hear this now.
So, Mark Walter, who is, very rich, he is under investigation by the U.S. Attorney's Office. And according to the Wall Street Journal, federal investigators took interest in his companies last year after an internal whistleblower complaint about how his asset management firm, Guggenheim Investments, which is behind all of the Dodgers stuff, booked revenue it received from insurance companies. So they fudged their books is what they're being investigated for.
There's people who think that they did a little sneaky stuff.
Insurance companies paying out to the Guggenheim Investments, they took that as revenue instead of insurance. It's very complicated.
Let's just put it on a place that we can try and understand it. The word is that Walter is potentially
in some trouble.
Difficulty here.
The other part. He made a trip to the White House in late last month.
Walter did.
And it
Do you
just
know
so
this?
Happened.
I mean,
yeah, no, it's publicized that
okay,
he went to
right.
the White House.
Okay, okay.
And here's the conscribacy.
Okay.
That he wants to get out of these charges. And again, conscribacy.
Yes, this is conscribacy.
He wants to get out of these charges because they're going to be really bad for him because he cooked the books. And so the government said...
The government's nephew's brother is now riding to the rescue.
Yes, he's going to purchase your team for $12.5 billion, and maybe this stuff goes away.
That's your conscribacy.
That's the conscribacy. Now, the other part of this that people are pointing to as weird is that Kushner, who bought the Lakers now, he was involved in the FIFA investment plan that Gianni Infantino put together, but it blew up and no one wanted to do it. And they were going to, Kushner's Thrive Eternal was going to put $4.2 billion into FIFA. And so all of a sudden, this deal gets taken away, and now you have another deal 5 days later.
All right. Let me stop us there before we say something we shouldn't.
Yeah, we're going down a road that I don't know the answers to, but that's
you
my conscribacy.
You out there make up your own mind.
Yes, conscribacy.
But what I wanted to add to this, somewhere listening to this show is somebody who lives on a hill, a mountain overlooking La Jolla, and they have more money than you or I will ever have or anybody else.
Yeah, give me some.
No. Well, yeah. But what I'm going to say is they know what I'm about to say, I think. And that is that whenever you get into the billions of dollars in the world of business dealings, there's just no way it ever sounds like it can go off without some potential shenanigans. It just doesn't. I don't know that it ever does or doesn't because I'm not privy to these things. I don't sit in on the meetings. No, I'm not a lawyer.
No.
I'm not trying to finagle this or that. But to me, when you get the names Kushner and Walters
and White
Iger,
House
and White House and Lakers
and FBI
and
investigations.
FBI investigations and $12 billion and $10 billion and money made and decisions being made in 5 days, kind of hard for us not to think something a little goofy is going
on.
It's fishy.
It's very fishy.
Now,
someone makes a great
Lakers,
comment. What's up with the LA NBA teams? You got the Clippers under investigation for
cheating,
circumventing the salary cap.
Right, to give him more money.
And now you got this whole thing going on. Now, it still has to go through a vote with the NBA. The owners have to approve it and everything. So I wonder if this starts to become such a bad story for them that they end up going in a different direction.
I got a better idea. Let's not allow this sale. Let's continue the investigation of, what is it, Mark Walter?
Mark Walter.
Or Terz?
It's Walter.
Okay. Let's continue the investigation. Let's not allow this to happen. Let's continue the investigation of Mark Walter. And let's let him get away with whatever books he might have cooked to buy the Lakers. But let's take him down for owning the Dodgers. And let's throw that whole organization into a complete, utter disarray. Can we do that?
Yeah. I mean, this whole thing, like, Magic Johnson isn't helping anything either. Magic Johnson tweeted right after all the news came out, "Lakers fans, you couldn't have two better owners. I've known Bob personally for over 40 years. He has always loved the Lakers and basketball. He'll bring championships back to L.A." It's nothing to see here. I get the feel that it's a nothing to see here type of situation, but there's plenty to see there.
Hard to believe that in 5 days they could have come to an agreement.
Yeah, someone just said, "You mean
is.
The Dodgers owner, Mark Walter?" Yes, that guy.
Right. I'm saying.
So could the Dodgers be in violation of something and all of their championships get taken away? Now I'm getting a little crazy.
All right, let's take all the Dodger championships away and just give them to the Astros. Because that's what the Dodger fans think happened already in 2017. Speaking of the Dodgers, I want to congratulate the terribly injured, could barely get up to lift his arm over his head, Blake Snell, who walked out there last night after 5 months in the infirmary struck out like 12 guys with his eyes closed.
I just imagine him.
Like, come on.
I just imagine being like Forrest Gump, like eating ice cream in the infirmary the entire
time.
I
love Blake Snell personally. I hate the fact that he's now a Dodger, and in May he can just go on the injured list, twiddle his thumbs for 4 months, then say he's... Why is it that everybody else comes back from being on the IL and has to work their way up? 3 innings, 4 innings, 5. He comes back, 12 Ks, no problem.
Is that what he really did?
I think he did, 11 or 12, yeah.
Oh, gosh. I actually didn't want to know. I stopped watching.
Because just...
MLB put out a tweet saying, Blake Snell's back. He struck out 2 of the first 3 batters.
Oh, he's just blowing
but
guys away.
You know what I'm seeing now more and more is fans are calling this out. Fans are like, well, yeah, if the Dodgers didn't have such a good
the money to spend to be able to...
They wouldn't be able to do this. Blake Snell would have been forced back here earlier on in the season.
To be able to pitch Sheehan, to pitch Wroblewski, to pitch all these guys that are good enough to keep them in first place.
Yeah.
But not good enough in the playoffs. You won't see any of these guys in the playoffs.
No, you'll see Blake Snell. You'll see Tyler Glass now. You'll see...
Yamamoto. Yeah.
Maybe Roki Sasaki will cry at some point during the playoffs.
Let me tell you something. Shohei Ohtani will be ready one way or the other. Book it, my friend.
But they do say That his knee is sore.
They can
Chris.
Say whatever they
He's
want.
Only going to be an opener is what they're telling us.
They also say that he didn't gamble. You don't believe
Fantastic
that, do you?
Point. By the way, next week I'm going to have
you
my...
You don't believe that, do you?
I don't. I believe
right,
that
then.
He. I believe that he knew something, okay? I believe that he knew something. That's another thing. That FBI situation with Shohei Ohtani ended in like 2 weeks.
Nothing to see there either.
Things can take forever.
Yeah.
But when they want it to go through quickly, it does.
Shohei Ohtani, did you gamble? No. Okay.
All
next
right.
case.
We're good. Shohei, or I'm sorry, Ipe, you're
Wait
going to jail.
Wait a second. Before we let you go, Shohei, we're going to need to put somebody in jail. Huh, how about this guy? Perfect.
How about Ipe? Ipe's like, hey, you're going to give me some money?
Okay. How about Ipe?
I mean, it's like the Balco thing where that guy went to prison for Barry Bonds.
Very nice day for Alec Bregman tonight of the Cubs. He homered in the 6th, the 7th, and the 8th. They won their game. Padres won theirs.
Woo-hoo!
We'll see you tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Don't forget, roundtable in the morning.
Yes.